Okay, and welcome back, talking to John about the mysterious, well, I don't know if they're mysterious, I guess they are because they're so secretive, organization DARPA. All right, John, go ahead.
Well, I mean, just to give an example as to how this planning process went, I'm looking at one of the documents that was generated as to how we divided into a group. And one of the things that, see, they would talk about, here's our deliberations and ideas that resulted. And this will give you an idea when you see it in context or broadly understand. I won't read the whole document nor every subpoint, but you'll get the idea. First, reduce human soldier support logistics. Utilize satellite surveillance 24/7 with eyes on target for full situational awareness. One of the things that we talked about that is pseudo-satellite systems, as well as, in terms of flattening the hierarchy, directly feeding information to autonomous assets, whether it's robots or human teams that could access information without having to have it filtered first. Because the filtering process can clarify it, but can also delay information. They talked about employing distributed operations. And what they wanted us to do is a lot of out-of-the-box thinking. And the first thing they did is say, no existing legal ramifications are to be considered. They did not want us bound by any treaty. They did not want us bound by any law. They did not want us filtering out any ideas on the notion that it might be immoral even. Now, that can cause some consternation, but in terms, it doesn't mean that the documents will be morality-free zones in the end. But they didn't want to filter out any ideas on the notion that the Geneva Convention prohibits, say, chemical or biological warfare. It gets troubling. I'll admit some of this was troubling to me when you consider that it was a heavy focus on urban operations, which could be used, say, in the United States. And when you remove some of the protections of law, constitution, civil rights, international agreements, it gives pause for thought. But it did free up quite a lot of more interesting ideas. And then here they said the group was initially divided into four discussion teams that were tasked to write down any solutions they foresaw to the problem at hand. This goes to the scenarios that we were presented in context of briefings as to the difficulties, what went right, what went wrong. But then they said that they had the presumption that urban warfare would become more rather than less of a fixture of international events. And they said they wanted to understand how the future military would still address various types of missions, but to accomplish them differently than we would today.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people are going to say, yeah, that's common sense. Well, in a large-scale organization like the military and the Pentagon, no, it isn't, because bureaucratic inertia, and we've always done it this way, stakeholders, contractors, suppliers, everything changes if you change the basis of your operations. You get rid of, say, heavy forces like armor. Well, there's quite a lot of companies that, whether it is producing the tanks, the spare parts, the training, the munitions, make an enormous amount of money in this. And quite a lot of officers, say, in the armor branch, who can't envision a military operating without a tank-heavy force or without a main battle tank like the M1 Abrams. So developing a complete vision to do those types of to have those capacities without mm-hmm. having those platforms mm-hmm. requires quite a change in thinking. So, I mean, I know this gets perhaps more technical than some of your listeners might want to hear, so I'll ask you to shepherd the discussion. But when they're looking at these types of aspects, the training or the planning did get quite technical, and whenever it was relevant, they had somebody mm-hmm. there to give a briefing, and of course the cross section of experts were there. A lot of the people there had no military experience at all, but in every working group we had a recently returned combat veteran who could tell you exactly what was going on the ground. My military experience was a bit more dated, though I understood quite a lot of what was necessary. I hadn't been in any of the more recent operations. We had some individuals who still had scabs on their face when their windshield was blown in by an RPG. So right. And they had only been in back home for 2 weeks.
Wow.
So, you know, they keep their feet firmly grounded in current experience, but they're trying to look far ahead and without, you know, without any limits as to their planning and constraint processes. And one of the greatest surprises to me, and this is something I perhaps should have led with, was the fact that when it came to a petroleum-free military, they've already got the capacities. That's what was explained to me. Not with any grand admission and a diagram saying this is the free energy system of the future, but in side discussions, it was made quite clear that the reason they changed the planning process and kind of segregated this section of energy experts that were very, very focused on, well, how are we going to get to the petroleum-free military? They did not want us discussing how to get to a petroleum-free military. And it was revealed to me, at least by someone whose position put them in a position and in able to know this, that they already had the capacity with existing black shelved and classified patents to create a petroleum-free military. They did not did not want to focus our overall group time on getting from A to Z when they already had it in the wings. So they segregated that group, let them plan and come up with their own ideas, but without influencing the overall tenor of the entire conference. And that to me was a big surprise. That actually reoriented my thinking in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Because prior to that point, I never read or investigated anything along those lines.
Any doubt in your mind that Stanley Meyer was murdered?
You know, at the time I went to that conference, I never heard of the man.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Since then, and since those revelations, I've delved quite deeply. And he and others, they gave him, I believe, lead, you know, that whole Mexican cartel thing, silver or lead. And he wouldn't take silver to shut up and leave it alone. So I do believe they killed him, quite honestly, because that was one of the technologies mentioned. There were several technologies mentioned to me in these side conversations that I should look up so I could become familiar with what they were talking about. And they said, look at nitinol. In terms of having a generator running with nitinol metals technology, and this gentleman named Stanley Meyer. And it was only after this conference that I ended up looking up there was a documentary, I'm sure you can get it on YouTube still, it runs on water. It's like about an hour long, and it has...
Well, he's in it. He does his own documentary. He shows how he's at the kitchen sink with a device. I mean, it's quite remarkable.
But he wasn't the only one at least in that documentary, It Runs on Water. And what surprised me when I looked it up is that was originally aired in 1995 and dropped right down the memory hole before the internet had achieved penetration. And I was surprised because this conference was 10 years after that documentary, and I, like almost everyone at that conference, had never heard of this gentleman. So you know, quite an odd, you know, and his tech was already well developed then. And other things that I heard of, and people can look up Paul Zigaras of Zigaras Racing. He's someone who took the silver and shut up. None of this is directly from my DARPA experience. No one ever put on the blackboard and said, yes,
sure,
you know, someone knocked these off. But it was made quite clear to me that there are a variety of technologies, that there's over 5,000 patents that have been national security lettered into obscurity and classified, and about half of them related to energy systems. Now, that's quite a lot. If 1 in 10 of 5,000 classified patents were energy systems, it would be tremendous. But to think that there's over 2,500, 2,800 classified energy patents, that tells you that people have been consistently coming up with breakthroughs. And my own investigation in this topic you know, looking up individuals like Eugene Malov. You know, another thing that was mentioned.
Eugene Malov was a friend of this program, was on several times, at least twice, and just a really a nice guy. He's a smart guy. Nice guy, though.
Well, from what I read, he had incredible integrity, and that was something else that was mentioned at the conference, was that cold fusion had been confirmed, that Pons and Fleischmann had, in fact, their breakthrough was legitimate, and it had been replicated in many labs, and my own reading seems to have confirmed that. There's quite a lot of labs and universities that have independently broken this through, yet there seems to be an establishment against this, keeping it quiet, even as individual labs, including major government labs and reputable university labs around the world, consistently report positive results in replicating that experiment. It told me that there is something keeping this shut down. And my question would be, are they trying to keep oil going as long as possible and then transition to a petroleum-free military, having prepared for it? Or something that was discussed, like, again, this is side conversations, not official focus of the conference, was that the internet has made it possible for people to access this, whereas in 1995 they could put it even on the, it could be a documentary on TV and dropped on the memory hole, and very few people would have heard of it. By 2005, the internet was making it possible to resurrect quite a lot of old broadcasts. People digitized what they had caught on VCR and tape, and then they put it online. By 2015, you cannot go on the internet, put in free energy, and not be flooded with credible information. There's some crazy stuff out there, and there's fraudsters as well. But there's quite a lot of credible information, in that more and more people would be, they presume would be investigating and confirming this tech themselves.
You think? Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, you've got 3D printing coming online. That was something else 10 years ago. It existed, but there was no public awareness or knowledge in terms of what it could do and what you would propose. So when you consider that people at home with 3D printers, professional level 3D printers, home workshops, home electronics labs, dedicated high-end professionals who now know that this is possible, do their own efforts and look as to what else is up there, you're going to have people breaking through, and perhaps even cottage industries developing around doing this. So at the point, I think they realize that this stuff is going to be coming online sooner or later. They're going to try and keep control of it, and at least, and say, just in time to save the planet, we now have all these free energy systems. But there are other companies that are already openly operating on this principle. There's Blacklight Power. That's shocked me to go.
But tell me, now, this is from the 10-year-ago conference, or have you picked this up on your own since then?
Both. Well, I mean,
what is Blacklight Power?
I don't have all of the documents in front of me to give you the names, but without Googling. But there's a gentleman who has redefined some of the energy physics and the state of what you would call atoms, where they can go into a lower energy state and the electrons can drop into lower orbit shells than is otherwise emitted. And he has written and rewritten entire textbooks on this. And what he found is, by having a hydrogen atom basically drop its orbiting electron into a lower shell state, it could actually release a tremendous amount of energy cleanly. And what it created, in these hydrinos, that's what he called it, are difficult to capture. But when they capture them, it can do things like be used to create, manufacture conductive plastics, which in and of itself is a breakthrough engineering field and could lead to numerous applications of technological capabilities that to this date have been considered science fiction. So if you were to look up Black, and he's been demonstrating, and he's had independent labs at universities confirm his equipment works, and he's built a power he's built an entire company around the idea that they would go and alter your existing, the grid would still be the grid, but the existing utility companies would be able to generate power cleanly and pretty much forever using hydrogen atoms to release this information. And the byproduct of this would not be poisonous, but would be highly beneficial and useful.
Totally beneficial, yeah. Now, what about H3? Supposedly plentiful on the moon, but rather difficult to find here.
I'm not very familiar with it. I've read about quite a lot of things, and it sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll admit, power systems are not my forte.
Right.
And I have no qualifications in terms of high energy physics, et cetera. My own reading, it blows my mind what's out there in terms of physical states, from Ormus to Hydrinos to, you know, I'm...
The traditional image of Hollywood's warehouse with crates, and they're full of technology that would turn the whole world inside out. That's true. There's probably more than one huge warehouse. There's so much out there technologically that would benefit this planet. For some reason, they aren't interested in saving it. They're talking now about creating bacteria to terraform Mars. Mars was already inhabited. Mars was a victim, apparently, of a nuclear war at one time. And I'm going to have a gentleman on, Dr. John Bernstein, next week, who's written a book called Death on Mars. Very interesting, very speculative, but very provocative. And
well, if I can weigh in on that, I'll tell you, none of this comes to my expertise, and do not take this as an official endorsement of anyone's ideas. But I started, I had some high priority issues, health issues, et cetera, intervene in my life after this DARPA conference that changed the whole direction of my life and kind of stopped me from following that up.
Sure.
Or I at least like to think, from the feedback I was given at the conference, that I had aroused enough interest that I would have been brought into the establishment to do some level of work in planning and engineering, and I would have loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, life, God, whoever decided it was not to be. Mm-hmm. But what it did is it opened my eyes into investigating and reading other topics that up to that point had been considered fringe. And whereas I had first encountered your site in a number of the articles you post on Rents.com in about 2000,
mm-hmm.
and it had shocked me and interested me, and cognitive dissonance had often had me saying, if that were true, I'd be hearing about it in a lot of other places.
Oh, no.
And since that time, I'd been always working on opening my eyes and perspective anyways since I left the military. But from that DARPA conference on, knowing certain things that I considered impossible were absolute reality,
mm-hmm.
Starting to investigate that, and the more I develop, the deeper down the rabbit hole I go.
Yeah.
And whereas some of it is surely disinformation, some of it is surely dead ends and kooks and fraudsters, there is enough out there that when you start checking references and references of references and references, and that's how I've built quite an extensive home library, you just come to realize that this world is stranger and more fascinating than you ever would imagine. And any idea that I used to automatically think, that's just too crazy. Like, did we land on the moon? Or does Mars have an atmosphere? I don't necessarily have, yes, I believe Mars was this or Mars was that, but I no longer automatically reject anything out of hand.
There are too many pictures from Curiosity, John. Too many. Hundreds of them. Joseph Skipper's page, for God's sakes. There are too many right angle things, too many things that are not natural. There are no forces on this planet that will create even one-tenth of what we've seen up there in these pictures that stretch the imagination. It's obvious that there's wreckage all over the place.
Well, Hoagland, you know, that's something that surprised me. I have a few DVDs and CDs where he showed mathematical relationships.
You
tend to find these consistent golden ratio and pi.
That's right.
Relationships again and again.
Well, those were all well and good in their day. We're way beyond that now. Curiosity is sending back pictures. And some of them have been tweaked with, yes, but some of them have not. And there are pictures of steps, flat buildings, terms of foundations, walls, low walls. There are all kinds of, there's even a picture of what looks very much like a squirrel. Pictures of people in the distance, pictures, you name it, and there are pictures. Go to Joseph Skipper's MarsAnomalies.com and look at the pictures. The pictures aren't all lies. They're amazing.
Well, I'll tell you, I have no doubt of that. The question, of course, is always which ones are genuine and which ones aren't. But what
it just takes one.
Well, I agree. You're getting no disagreement from me in principle. I'm just not endorsing nor arguing against anything.
Sure.
But what shocked me is, starting with Graham Hancock, who I read while recovering from some pretty profound injuries, is what got me just looking on Earth, is there seems to be quite a lot of congruence between ruins we have deep underwater and off the coast of Japan and some of what people are alleging to be finding on Mars, and even the history of our own world and what we seem to have lost is quite shocking. And now
I think we've been excuse me, but in my view, and I've said this for 22 years, ever since reading A Canticle for Leibowitz, we have arisen, created extraordinary amounts of technological competence, and then blew it every time. And we've come up, destroyed ourselves, and the remnants have slowly over the millennia. We've got 4.5 billion years to play with here. Let's say three.
That even surprises me. There's some things that I've read that our entire dating systems are wrong. And I'm not saying that Earth is 4,000 years old, but it comes
for 4 billion.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that there's some credible evidence from people who have worked even in the orthodox areas of science that our carbon dating is incorrect. That, Mount St. Helens, for instance, which we know erupted in, 1980, was frequently showing as 0.5 million to 3 million years old. So what we think we know about dating in artifacts, Michael Cremo's Forbidden Archaeology, and many, I've got hundreds of these books, and there's hundreds more I could easily try and buy. And this isn't even new. I mean, because of the internet, it's reaching a much wider audience, but we've had people credibly digging into it, and some of what we think are just movie ideas are reports of real events, including Nazis and the U.S. government looking for ancient religious artifacts, which perhaps I would argue are ancient technological artifacts. I try not to take a hard and line fast position because I have no philosophical basis to make an assumption or definite. I try not to lock myself in so I don't lose, the ability to perceive new information.
Very important.
What I've encountered, whether it's Mars or moon landing photos being faked, which shocked me. The idea that they faked them, whether or not we went, some of those photos are clearly faked. Whether or not we were there, too much cannot be explained using light physics, etc. Now, whereas had you asked me 10 years ago, I had encountered the idea that the moon landing was faked, and then I thought that's just insane. I'm not going to read that. Now I read that and I start investigating. And every time I do it, I don't even need drugs. It's almost like taking LSD because it assaults your preconceptions. Once you come to admit that I'm going to look at the evidence with an open mind instead of presuming it's wrong and that they have to prove it's right, I say, let me judge it the same way I would judge existing evidence and existing theories, and which one matches, the physical evidence, which one matches, physics, etc., with the preconceptions removed. And it changed my philosophy on quite a lot of things.
Yeah, I think that we have a break here. We better do it. Let's do the rest of our break, and we'll come right back with John in a couple of minutes. Thank you. Okay, and we're back. I think it safe to say that this solar system of ours has been full of life, transit, travel, construction, disaster, over the millennia, over the billions of years. It's not at all what you think. We really have a birthright to know all this stuff, but those in control choose otherwise, which is, I think, a pretty enraging kind of a circumstance. But we really have a right to know, don't you think, John?
I would think in the global sense, yes. I look at information that is classified from my own experience in the military,
yeah,
et cetera, is quite a lot doesn't need to be. It's classified to protect reputations and foolish behavior, which makes it harder to distribute those lessons. It also makes it easier for corruption to survive. I don't have any of the stats to hand, but I was reading that so much of what we do now is routinely classified, something like half of everything the government does. Police departments now have got
that bad?
What's that?
Half of everything?
Yeah, I don't have the number in the article to hand, but it might even be worse than that, because you look at your police departments. They used to be completely transparent. Now so much they say, well, this is classified and we're not releasing the information. And I don't mean not releasing until the family is notified. Not releasing, period.
Trying to
get accountability.
That's right.
And now we still operate, at least in theory, our government claims legitimacy on the basis of we are supposed to be a representative republic with democratic mechanisms. Mm-hmm. It becomes impossible to make an intelligent voting choice, mm-hmm, presuming, of course, everything hadn't got out of control, corrupted by PACs, et cetera. But it's impossible.
We've got no legitimate elections anymore. We all know that.
I've come to believe that myself, but, you know, while maintaining the pretense, while arguing against classifying everything under the sun, it is impossible to make any type of intelligent voting decision.
Agreed.
Without knowing what your government is doing in your name, at least on a broad sense.
Yep.
And generally, classified information used to apply to wonder weapon projects and actual events, you know, that are occurring, where the release of the information could influence and degrade the outcome. Not 20 years ago did it even happen. We still have information classified, and this shocked me, as to what type of weapons and technologies were accessed in Operation Paperclip at the end of World War II. So we have classified a lot of Nazi technologies, and that's where you start to get into the anti-gravity and the Bell, the Glocke, and the Foo Fighters, etc.
Sure.
As to, you know, and there's I can't remember the name of everyone, but he wrote The Hunt for 0 Points, and he documented some of this in his own investigations, and he was a credible professional, worked for Jane's Defense Publications, which is perhaps the premier publisher.
Yeah, I remember who you're talking about. I'm sorry, the name escapes me.
Yeah, but he wrote The Hunt for 0 Points for any of your listeners who want to look it up. And I read it, and I reference-checked it, and I bought a number of the references and read them and checked their references, whatever I could. You know, and some of the books that I have delved into, I take over 100 pages of notes and reference follow-ups. And I'm not saying this to toot my own horn, but because when you run across information that is unlike anything that you've accessed in the public sphere, mm-hmm, you really want to check into it to find out that what they're claiming, however outrageous it is, has a basis in reality. The Victor Schauberger,
what a brilliant man, but nobody knows the names
of
these
people.
Well,
that's the thing. All this dropped down the memory hole.
Yeah.
Dropped down, and, you know, if people understood what had been classified.
Nick Cook wrote it.
Yeah, Nick Cook. But it just shocked me that this information, you know, is widely available to verify. And when you look at us keeping this information secret to this day, they're not keeping it secret just by bureaucratic inertia. You read Nexus magazine and allegations that the Nazis had, credible in my opinion, allegations that they had tactical nuclear weapons and backed off using them for very good reasons, that, you know, you get into the development of the bell-shaped anti-gravity propelled vortex engine aircraft, etc., and that this was used to bargain to save these people's lives after the war. None of that, I think,
including Hitler and Eva Braun, they went to Argentina. American DC-4s flew thousands of them down there.
I'll tell you, 10 years ago, I would have argued against that because I had studied in university as well as on my own extensively World War II and history in general. Yet when I came to find credible reference checkable information that I had never been taught at university in advanced placement courses in any of the more popularly published, you know, accounts of World War II, you know, Churchill's, etc., it just shocked me. It's not that what shocks me isn't that they're telling lies. What you read about World War II, for instance, and Operation Paperclip is true. But what it's missing, what they don't tell you, so it never arouses your curiosity to investigate. And what is missing is 10 times more important than what is taught, and it would profoundly influence your view of the overall narrative.
I agree.
You know, in terms of
the common perception of World War II is almost ass backwards. There's so much of it that is wrong.
I wouldn't argue against that. I'll tell you, if you read, I think there's a book, Gruesome Harvest, and it uses Time magazine for a lot of contemporaneous information sources. I mean, our own sources and what we did to Germany during and after the war.
Yeah.
And what we were arguing at Nuremberg, and while we were doing worse medical experiments, you know, the lead toxicologist for the Manhattan Project had been injecting women with plutonium and uranium in hospitals.
I know, just wonderful people.
But I'm just saying, just to be clear, I saw no evidence of any of that type of mentality of DARPA. These people did have high ethical standards, even though they said take off the gloves in terms of how you plan.
Yeah.
But when it comes to just our view of how things shake out, you know, very few people would know anything even about the existence of this DARPA project and this conference if I weren't talking. You can go on the line, and if you put in DARPA Petroleum Free Military Conference 2005, you will find professionals having it on their resume, but you find no publication of this information, no publicity of this information. To me, I think it, you know, I didn't get sworn to secrecy, and I kept my mouth shut for 10 years anyways. If I had been sworn to secrecy, I would keep my mouth shut indefinitely. But at the same time, this is standard now. There is so much information that is out there. There's so many planning documents. There's so many work groups. And what is happening in secret. And nobody is knowing it's going on except for other bureaucracies and agencies within the Pentagon.
Yeah, they're very cleverly compartmentalized to keep the lid on even easier.
And you separate, like, for instance, what happened with DARPA. What we did is they had all of the proposals and all of the designs. But I would bet now, if there's anyone other than the DARPA program managers, but if there's anyone who within the organizations themselves that was there proposing ideas like me, that was actively working on a project, unless, like one gentleman, they had patents that were going to be used for future systems, I'd be surprised. And that itself creates a level of compartmentalization, because as I talk to you off air, you get one group to show it's possible or come up with the ideas, and then it's thank you very much, everyone, back to your daily life. And having known it's possible, having had successful test or proof of concept, or having decided to go along their lines, they go find other people that they know are capable of bringing it to fruition, and they do it. And right then and there, without one classified memorandum being written, you have such a disconnect between the people who thought it up and the people who are implementing it. No right hand knows what any left hand is doing. And as a result, and that's within the establishment itself. So certainly the public can't be aware. I think it would be very interesting, and that's why I talked about this, that we do have plans, and there are credible technologies for a petroleum-free future. To me, this idea of focusing on the electric car, ridiculous. You want to go to the mid-1970s, you had Vince Carman and early Ernie Parker. Both of them, slightly different ways, had come up with a way to use off-the-shelf conversions or off-the-shelf parts to convert any existing vehicle to a petrol hydraulic hybrid and at least double fuel efficiency. Uh-huh. And if a vehicle were designed from the ground up to run that way, you're talking fuel miles per gallon of like 140, 150.
Oh, yeah.
You do that, you could run off of hemp biodiesel and immediately, within the 10 years.
Well, you could make the cars out of hemp and then run them on
that
hemp.
That too. Yeah, that's a 1940 technology.
That's right.
What people don't know about what our existing technologies are capable of without going petroleum free, going pure, we don't need corn as ethanol. Hemp is 100 times better. I don't want to mention a certain thing about my background, or it just kind of draws a big target on my back. But what I learned about the drug war from privileged position of information changed my thinking on the prohibition of cannabis drastically, and just the industrial and medical use. And I know, I don't care if someone wants to use it recreationally, but that completely changed the focus as to whether it's worse to be drunk or high. That's just the most ridiculous aspect. The idea that we create poisonous chemicals to do what could be done better naturally,
of course,
that could stimulate, instead of using poisons and pesticides and destroying our ground, what could be regenerating our soil.
Yeah, thanks to John Dee.
I mean, but that's the point. These technologies exist. They are not new. Some of them are exceedingly old. The petrol hydraulic hybrid allows any vehicle to be converted, double its fuel efficiency. You double its fuel efficiency and start using a hemp biodiesel. That in combination, we have energy independence and less pollution, and it completely stimulates our domestic agricultural sector and industrial sector and helps revolutionize a destroyed manufacturing base. But like you, I've come to believe, and though I cannot prove it, I could argue successfully, I think, that there are higher plans to internationalize and denude our country of productive assets and make our population dependent and desperate. And I saw some of this at the corporate level with decisions to deliberately create a foreign supply chain when we could have acted quicker with less cost using domestically sourced components for domestically designed and installed systems. But the company, I will not name it, had a deliberate policy of sourcing percentages of its every one of its projects from foreign produced components, even if it had to generate that capacity from nothing and delay projects by a year, which, you know, when it comes to trying to implement projects can be kill them. And it made no sense to me.
Sure.
But these were top down generated policies.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, with the business environment education, an international business environment education, it made no sense to me, especially in light of their other commitments to Six Sigma processes and what does it cost us not to do something, yet then they have a top-down driven policy that compromises their effectiveness and competitiveness in many different ways to emphasize a foreign supply chain. I mean, that's just making it more complicated and drawing your development dollars abroad and, compromising your effectiveness because it would go down, it would fail. in particular, a key component of a technology I used to design for, ended up having to come from Russia. They were capably produced, but mm-hmm. a year and a half after, we were all had it domestically sourced. It made no sense.
Got it.
To me. So quite a lot of what you talk about, and that's why I've come to your show. It's not that I wanted to believe it. It's that whether I heard it from you or not initially, a lot of what you say I have found through my own methods. And I'm not saying you're right about everything, and I'm not endorsing you for president and swearing that, you know, I'm going to name my children after you. But for your listeners to know, I find you are quite credible on a lot of issues.
Thank you.
On more issues than I ever would have thought when I first encountered you.
Thank you very kindly. I appreciate that. I've been a very good listener for a long period of time, like yourself. I've allowed material to sit, cook on its own, and then resolve itself into new viewpoints, new perspectives, that without that ability, I would never have gotten there. You just can't read it. When you come up with it on your own, there's a whole different kind of wisdom involved. And that's what this program is really about, to get people to consider things, to allow them to percolate, and to come up with their own conclusions. That's what I want. And I don't like people who only read things that they approve of, watch things that they revel in. I want people to watch things that make them angry, read things that upset them a little bit. That's how you learn. That's how we grow. I think it's very important.
Well, I would agree with that statement in its totality. And an example I found when it comes to education is people are no longer being taught rigorously to think, if they ever were, but they're not taught to think about issues nor consider them from the opposite side. They're no longer taught facts and then allowed to come to conclusions. They're taught conclusions and then cherry-picked facts that support it.
Right.
For instance, you know, the focus on man-made global warming in schools and Captain Planet. Whether or not global warming is real and man-made, the way it is taught in schools completely destroys the entire basis of coming to understand the issue. And they never teach the contrary, just like the way I learned about Darwinian evolution. This might upset some of your readers and think I'm a crackpot, but I quit believing in Darwinian evolution, not at least as presented, not mm-hmm. because I have any religious basis for challenging it, but because decade after I had studied it, accepted it pretty much as a belief system, which is what it is, I ran across books that credibly challenge it. I think The Neck of the Giraffe and The Emperor Wears No Clothes are two key books mm-hmm. that I investigated in, and a number of articles, etc., that it reoriented my thinking. And when you look at anomalous human skeletal remains and you know, the elongated skulls, that because of the parietal plates are different.
Oh, obviously not human, not Homo sapiens.
And not from skull binding either.
No way.
And as you pointed out, let's just say if I take a sampling of the articles you have on your site, and let's just pretend you have 90% of them are just made up by a man with fevered imaginations, which I know isn't the case because you aggregate from a lot of sources.
Right.
But let's just say only 1 in 10 of your articles were accurate. Just as you said with a Mars anomaly photo, it only takes one. And what I came to understand, and it saved my life medically, is quite an awful lot of theories.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to look at, well, does everything fit? Can you explain everything if you discount the orthodox point of view? No, when you're trying to knock down an orthodox theory, all you have to do is have one thing that it can't explain, that it cannot model, that is definite and exists. And if that's the case, if there is something that is definitely exists and that for it to exist, the current dominant theory cannot be correct, then you can't just shuffle it off, which is what modern science and our institutions try and do. They just pretend it doesn't exist, whether
Correct.
It's anomalous giant skeletons or models of exist. You know,
you've seen those folks on the internet, and I'm here to tell you, they're not all Photoshop hoaxes. All right, there were giants here.
You look at the existing records, unless you assume every newspaper from the 1800s to about 1920 lied.
Yeah.
And that every...
Oh, those are some wonderful stories in those old papers, especially in the Grand Canyon area. There were some amazing stories.
Well, I realize this doesn't go to my... In terms of what I was talking about with DARPA, but what I found was that... Prior to, say, about 1920, you know, they had these giant bones on display at the Chicago Museum. They had found them, and they reported there was not this mass acceptance of a Darwinian world model, which presumed a certain age of the Earth, which presumed plate tectonics and gradualism, an entire erected edifice of interlocking theories that circularly explain each other, which is not what science, true science, should be doing. But it is what we have, and you can call that a faith known as scientism. And again, I offer the disclaimer, I have no religious belief system that makes me look at any religious explanation and accept it personally. You could say I am belief system agnostic. So anyone who's going to say, well, that's just one of those religious fundamentalists talking, no, it's not. But back when they were more inclined to accept the Bible without having any notion as to, well, okay, the Bible says this, let's presume it's true. But if someone was going to be open-minded and say, okay, there's an awful lot it doesn't say, we found these giants. Okay, they talked about it in the Bible, so likely these giant bones fit into at least some worldview of humanity before Adamic man rose. Whether that was aliens or God or his prior, I don't know, and they didn't know. They usually interpret it through the Bible, but they didn't do what we do today and say that can't be. They were more inclined to, yes, have open-eyed wonder and say this is what we found.
Sure.
Rather than to do what we say today and try and fit into an explanation system. Because if you look at those hobbits they found in Indonesia, and they call them hobbits, you read the articles and they say, according to evolution, this would be their advantage. Well, one, that presumes evolution is what happened, and now you explained every trait you found through the lens of evolution. You could just as easily say, in accordance with a prophecy, it's no more valid. And to explain every artifact you find through evolution's lens conditions the people into thinking evolution's real without it being real. And it shapes our whole worldview without us knowing it's been shaped.
Very well said. John, thank you again for being here. It's always always fun, always fascinating to talk to you. We'll do it again.
Take care of yourself
and get some sleep. Thank you.
Okay. And I'm sorry I verged off of my area of expertise.
No, that was fun.
No one take it in that I endorse this from any belief system, but it's amazing what you find when you dig.
Indeed.
With an open mind.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you, John.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. All right, that's our program tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night and look forward to having you on board then. Let's see, who's on tomorrow? Andy Goss, Dr. Patty Doyle, Dr. Bill Deagle. So we'll have a lot of ground to cover tomorrow night. Take care, and we'll talk then.